listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me Daniel McAdams. It's been a long time, a number of years, I think, since Daniel was last with me. He teams up with Ron Paul at the Institute of Peace and Prosperity. He usually provides a little video discussion of some of the major issues in play every day at ronpaulinstitute.org. So I'd really suggest you folks might want to visit the ronpaulinstitute.org for some refreshing ideas about what's transpiring these days and why things are happening the way they are. Daniel is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, and he served as foreign affairs advisor to Congressman Paul from 2001 until Dr. Paul's retirement at the end of 2012. In the 1990s, Daniel worked as a journalist based in Budapest, Hungary, including an editorial page editor of the Budapest Sun. He also served as special rapporteur for the British Helsinki Human Rights Group while based in Europe, monitoring human rights and elections on the ground in various contentious states, including Albania, during the 1996-1998 civil unrest. So Daniel's had a tremendous background in international geopolitics. He's been involved with a whole lot of different organizations, and now his daily activities at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Thanks for joining me again, Daniel.
It's great to be back with you again, Jay. Thanks for having me.
It's really good, and I'm glad to know that the hurricane didn't wipe you out down there today, Daniel. I know you're down there in South Texas, off of the, and it was a nothing burger for you, you said. So we're really thankful that you're with us. I believe I'd like to get your thoughts about the obvious desire to destroy the U.S. Constitution. I talked about it in my opening monologue about how especially the really aggressive liberal Democrats seem to be interested in tearing everything down, the safeguards that our founding fathers put in place, you know, such as the Electoral College and, you know, every state getting two senators and, you know, and having the right to filibuster in the Senate floor and all those things they seem to want to take away. What do you think is happening to us? Why do you think, do these people not understand the reasons that those institutions were created and why they were for our own good, why they were created? Or is it an ignorance, or what do you make of it?
Well, I don't think it's an ignorance. I think they know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, one of the causations, and you would, I'm sure, agree with this, is that the stakes are too high. Washington has too much power. There's too much to be gained to hold on to the levers of power. And if we had the kind of government that you and I would prefer, the really stakes wouldn't be that high. There wouldn't be that much incentive. You wouldn't be controlling trillions of dollars and controlling people's lives. So the fact that the government is so big is one of the causative factors for this mad dash for power. But no, it's not ignorance on their part. These people are essentially, whether they know it or not, are Maoist in spirit. They want to destroy all the institutions of our society and rebuild them in a new image. And that image has been informed by, among other things, of course, our popular culture, but also particularly by their university professors and their entire educational background, which has taught them that everything that we value as a republic is a tool of oppression that must be overthrown. And so they know exactly what they're doing. Maybe the foot soldiers are not as well versed, but certainly the people that are guiding them know exactly what they're doing, and this year has been a banner year for them.
Well, they may know, but I'm guessing that the vast majority of people who will vote for Joe Biden are not aware of what is at stake here.
Yeah, I think that's true. I certainly don't think the majority of the people that are voting for Biden are down there ripping down statues and burning up police stations. Mm-hmm. However, you do have that element leading and guiding the party and guiding the more radical wing of the party. You know, the irony, Jay, is that as much as this is portrayed as a battle to the death between two radically different competing ideologies, the fact of the matter is there really is very little difference. The fake news of a partisan divide in the U.S. Is something that's very caustic. There really mm-hmm. isn't that much difference between the two parties. Mm-hmm. It's between really tyranny and liberty, and that battle has not even begun.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, there's issues. We see some issues on the Supreme Court, of course, which is a hot one. But when it comes down to the issue of tyranny, freedom, limited government, which Republicans have long ago, I guess maybe Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, to at least gave lip service to it, although he built up spending like mad. So he built up the government very dramatically when he was in power as well. So I think Republicans, and certainly when it comes to monetary policy, as Ron Paul knows as well as you, that Republicans don't seem to be concerned about spending enormous amounts of money any longer, or to printing money to paying for things either. So these are topics that I'll be talking to Alistair MacLeod about in the second half of today's show. But so it seems as though that we had a soft coup, an attempted coup d'etat against Trump. First, they with Russia, the trumped up things about Russia, and then you had the Ukraine. Supposedly, Trump was doing stuff in Ukraine that was crooked and everything else. But you know a lot about the Ukraine and about coups and about color revolutions and so forth. What can you tell us about the Ukraine? Because when we had you on more frequently a few years back, you talked a lot about the Ukraine. You talked a lot about what was going on with the color revolution there. How do these color revolutions work, Daniel?
Well, one of the most important things is to cause a disorientation in society. And you find these primarily in societies in transition. And that's why they were pretty common in Central and Eastern Europe, many of the countries of the former Soviet sphere of influence, because they were greatly transitioning societies from a command economy to a slightly more free economy. But when you had the elites controlling that transition and not wanting to let go of the reins of power, you had to prevent against any populism, against anyone who would go against the power that they had. And that's why the color revolutions that I monitored in the 90s included those against people like Vladimir Mečiar in Slovakia, who was a populist, and Sali Berisha in Albania, who was a radical free market populist type. But those people had to be undermined so that the people who represented the former nomenklatura could remain in power, essentially, de facto, if not de jure. And you're seeing a lot of that in the United States. The Trump phenomena surprised everyone. Mm-hmm. He wasn't expected to win. People believed the polls saying that 97% chance of Hillary winning. I think that was the New York Times the day before the election or something like this. So people believed these things. So when Trump actually did win, that, I think, is when the color revolution started in the U.S. We're supposed to be talking about whether there'll be a color revolution after this election. I would put forth that it started the day that President Trump won office. You have to, in the military jargon, you have to have an intelligence preparation of battlefield before you start the battle. And that's what we had in the U.S., an intelligence preparation of battlefield, established the idea and continue it for 4 years, that President Trump was elected illegitimately. It was Vladimir Putin. It was other things that got him elected. He was not elected by the American people, and that's what his opponents have done over and over from day one. So, yes, the color revolution started November 4 years ago.
Interesting. So that all this, this attempted impeachment – and of course the Mueller investigation, which came up empty, completely empty, I believe, and then the Ukrainian impeachment is all part of that game, you think?
Absolutely, it's all intended to establish the idea that Trump is not a legitimate president, And right. I do not say this as a Trump supporter.
I'm no, I know that.
When it comes to voting. So I have no, I have no dog in the race. But yeah. I don't know if you've read about this, if you're familiar with this. I'm sure you are because I heard your monologue earlier and you did reference it. But this Transition Integrity Project, and Whitney Webb, who's a great writer, a great investigative reporter, she wrote about it not long ago on her website, which readers can go to. It's the Unlimited Hangout. And she talks about this Transition Integrity Project got together to war game several different scenarios. Ostensibly, if Trump loses and refuses to leave the White House. But In fact, one of the war games was Trump has a clear victory, and then what do you do? And that is a fascinating article. This really did happen. John Podesta played the role of Biden in this war gaming, and you mentioned some of the potential outcomes. This is a pretty big organization. It counts among its members extremely prominent people, including its co-founder, Rosa Brooks, who was a Pentagon and State Department official under Obama. She also worked for a little place called the Open Society Foundation.
George Soros.
Know very well what that is. Yes,
George Soros. Yeah.
He was a general counsel to the president of Soros' foundation. And as you know, Jay, Soros was himself behind most of the color revolutions, including investing very heavily in the Ukraine revolution. So you're having a nexus between the actual real color revolutions in Central and Eastern Europe and the very individuals who were involved in attempting to undermine the results of this next election before they even happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have now, it's moving on to a more violent stage now. We've seen in Portland and Seattle and New York and, of course, Minneapolis and various other cities. And then we have COVID. Do you think all these things are just sort of coincidental, they just happened, or do you think there might be some collusion involved with these different events? Because if the aim is to keep people confused, they certainly have done a great job.
Yeah, and confused and disoriented. But yeah. Another important aim is to prepare Americans in America for the idea of martial law. And certainly if you look at the response to the coronavirus, particularly in the blue states, and if you look at what has happened with violence in particularly the blue states, you're seeing an America that's being prepared for the idea of martial law. How quickly people have accepted that somehow the government has the authority to force them to stay at home, to not go to their jobs, to not go to their churches, not go to their restaurants, to put a filthy rag on their face and walk around with it all day. Idea that there's an authority among governors and mayors of these states to push people around like this is unprecedented. And then when you look at the unrest in these cities, frankly, myself, it's not that I'm wanting martial law, but when I look at these thugs beating up innocent people, I'm thinking, damn, I don't want to defund the police. I want to send them in there to take care of this horrible chaos. These people are absolute thugs. So, yes, I think we're being psychologically prepared to accept the idea of martial law, and that is extremely frightening.
Well, it is frightening to those of us who have lived in this country for so long, and I've talked to many people from Eastern Europe who said that their parents came here just to avoid with this very thing that's going on now. So it is frightening, and I guess we're out of time now, Daniel. I can't believe we're out of time already. Summing up here, though, you address these issues frequently at the Ron Paul Institute, right? So people should go to hear what you have to say there at ronpaulinstitute.org.
Yeah, and we have our daily show. It's on YouTube. Ron Paul Liberty Report is our channel there, and we're actually getting close to 250,000 subscribers to our YouTube channel. So we do every day live at noon Eastern time. We do a broadcast Monday through Friday. So we'd love to have your listeners join us as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Daniel. We'll have to have you back when we can have you for more time. Thank you so much for being with us, and
thanks,
we'll do it again sometime, hopefully very soon. Take care. All right, folks, so we have to go to break. We'll be right back with Alistair MacLeod right after the break. Don't go away. Alistair has some very important things to tell you.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
NV Gold Corp, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTC, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in North America. With an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2020, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors including Eric Sprott, a globally recognized technical team, technical coverage from industry gold experts, and cash in its treasury. Visit nvgoldcorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.